Blog Talk Radio.
And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs, plus $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006.
Time. He said, but I'm through marching.
All right.
He says, it's up to y'all now. And so, the late Honorable Julian Bond, who may be someone you're familiar with, was there.
All right.
And he said, let's go and let's follow Martin Luther King's directions and let's keep on marching. And he marched the 30 or some of us up to Booker T. Washington High School. And as we marched around the statue of my great-grandfather, Booker T. Washington, I thought about what Dr. King had said, and I said, as a young man of only about 24 years old, I said, I've got to get started following what he told us to do.
All right.
And here I am tonight.
All right.
I'm glad we have some young people here because I want to share a message with you that's really for the young people, but we all can benefit. And this message was given 6 months before he passed, but many of these things I had heard him say during the course of my association with him, and maybe some of them you will remember. I heard just a little while ago, I heard some of the words recited by Sister Betty McClendon, and so you've heard these things, but I just want to share them together with the rest of my talk. But the purpose of this talk is to help the young people to understand something about life's blueprint. Dr. King said, I want to ask you a question, and that is, what is in your life's blueprint?
All right.
This is a most important and crucial period in your lives for what you do now and what you decide now at this age may well determine which way your life will go.
All right. All right.
He said, whenever a building is constructed, you usually have an architect who draws a blueprint, mm-hmm. and that blueprint serves as the pattern, as the guide, and as the model for those who are to build the building.
Yeah.
And a building is not well erected without a good, solid, and sound blueprint.
All right.
Now each of you is in the process of building the structure of your lives. Mm. And the question is whether you have a proper, a solid, and a sound blueprint.
All right.
I want to suggest some things that should be in your life's blueprint.
All right.
Number one, in your life's blueprint should be a deep belief in your own dignity,
right.
your own worth, and your own somebody-ness.
Right.
Don't allow anybody to make you feel that you are nobody.
Right.
Always feel that you count.
Yeah.
And always feel that you have worth. And always feel that your life has ultimate significance. Now, that means that you should not be ashamed of your color.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know that it is very unfortunate that in so many instances our society has placed a stigma on the Negro's color.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right. You know that there are some Negroes who are ashamed of themselves.
Right.
Don't be ashamed of your color.
Right.
Don't be ashamed of your biological features.
Yes.
Somehow you must be able to say in your own lives and really believe it, I am black but beautiful.
Yes.
And believe it in your heart.
Yes.
And therefore, you should not be lured into purchasing cosmetics advertised to make you lighter. And neither do you need to process your hair or buy somebody else's hair to make it appear straight. I have good hair, and it is as good as anybody else's hair in the world. And we have to believe that. Now, in your life's blueprint, be sure that there are some principles, and one is the principle of somebody-ness.
Yes. Yes.
And secondly, in your life's blueprint, you must have as a basic principle the determination to achieve excellence in your fields of endeavor.
Yes.
As Dr. Nobles has achieved great excellence in many fields of endeavor. Each one of you should look at all of your role models in your community and strive as I strove to achieve the excellence that I saw and I'm still trying in Dr. Martin Luther King.
All right. All right.
You are going to be deciding as the days and the years unfold.
Yes.
You are going to be deciding what you will do with your life.
Yes.
I'm 75 years old and I'm still trying to work out God's plan for my life. But don't wait. Start now to decide what you will do with your life. I decided when I was 9 years old that I wanted to be a preacher of God's word. And I've been preaching for over 60 years. And I still am trying to live up to that mighty, mighty example of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, who is the greatest preacher the world has known. We're all a work in progress, but start now to develop yourself. And listen, once you discover what your work will be in your life, set out to do it and to do it well. We've all been tested. Some of us were straight A students, and some of us got a D every now and then. I remember when I got my first D. I had a couple. And one of them was in penmanship. I used to admire the girls in my second and third grade class because they had such beautiful penmanship. And I didn't want to be girly, so I tried to write rough. And for me, trying to write rough, I got a D. Well, I can truthfully say that I've learned to do better. But listen, my young friends, as Martin Luther King said, the doors are opening now to each of you. Doors of opportunity are opening to each of you that were not open to your mothers and fathers. And the great challenge facing you today is to be ready to enter those doors as they open.
Amen.
I remember a great military man that I knew personally. His name was General Chappie James.
All right.
He was the first full general, four-star general in the United States Armed Forces.
Amen.
And I met him when he was not a general.
All right.
I met him when he was a captain. And later, I saw him, because we were friends, when he was a colonel. And I was 12 years old, and I looked up to him and I said, "Are you going to become a general?" And he said, "Yes." He said, "But they don't want me to be a general." He said, "All of the officers that became officers when I did that are still in the military, they're generals except for me." He said, "But they're not going to stop me." He said, "I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to stick around because sooner or later, they're going to have to make me a general." And he achieved rank higher than most of those people because he got 4 stars.
All right.
But he wrote a book, and in his book he said that his mother told him when he was a boy, she said, "The doors of opportunity may not always be open for you when you want them to be open, but whenever they are open, make sure you're there with your bags packed."
All right. All right. All right.
So Martin Luther King said, as we continue and get ready to close, he said that Ralph Waldo Emerson, the great essayist, said in a lecture back in 1871 that if a man can write a better book or preach a better sermon or build a better mousetrap than his neighbor, even if he builds his house in the woods, the world will make a beaten path to his door.
All right.
And that hadn't always been the case. That hadn't always been true. But it will become increasingly true. And so I would urge you to study hard, to burn the midnight oil, And I would say to you, don't drop out of school. And I understand all of the sociological reasons why we often drop out of school. I dropped out of school because there was trouble in my family. I came from a broken home. And it was hard watching my mother suffer. So I got out and went and got a job.
Because
I didn't want to be a burden on mom. But I say, don't drop out of school. I paid a price. I could have been a general in the Air Force, but I dropped out of school. Fortunately, God blessed me to get back in school. And now God has blessed me to have 5 college degrees, and I'm a college professor. But I'm telling you, that's the long way around. Don't drop out of school. So I will continue and close with these ideas. When you discover what you're going to be in life, set out to do it as if God Almighty called you at this particular moment in history to do it. And don't just set out to do a good Negro job, but do a good job that anybody can do. Don't set out to just be a good Negro doctor, a good Negro lawyer, a good Negro school teacher, a good Negro preacher, a good Negro barber, or a good Negro beautician, or a good Negro skilled laborer. For if you set out to do something like that, just to be a good Negro something or another, you've already flunked your matriculation for entrance into the University of Integration. So my dear young people, particularly young people, set out to do a good job so well, as has been said earlier today, that the living, the dead, and the unborn couldn't do it any better. And as it's been said already today, if it falls on your lot to be a street sweeper, sweep streets like Michelangelo painted pictures, sweep streets like Beethoven composed music, sweep streets like Leontine Price sung before the Metropolitan Opera, sweep streets like Shakespeare wrote poetry. Yes, sweep streets so well that all of the hosts of heaven and earth will have to pause and say, as has been said today, here lived a great street sweeper who did his job or her job well. And as we close, if you can't be a pine on the top of the hill, be a scrub in the valley. But be the best little scrub on the side of the hill. Be a bush if you can't be a tree. If you can't be a highway, just be a trail. If you can't be a sun, be a star. For it isn't by size that you win or you fail. Be the best of whatever you are. We already have some noble examples of black men and women who have demonstrated to us that human nature cannot be cataloged. They, in their own lives, have walked through long and desolate nights of oppression, and yet they have risen up and plunged against cloud-filled nights of affliction to new emblazoned stars of inspiration. And so, from an old slave cabin of Virginia's hills, my great-grandfather, Booker T. Washington, rose to become one of America's greatest leaders and educators. He lit a torch in Tuskegee, Alabama, and darkness fled from that city. And yes, you should know this, because it is in your own city that the Honorable Dr. Calvin Nobles rose up and achieved excellence in everything he has done.
Uh-huh.
Starting as a boy in school and aspiring to be somebody, he went into the United States Navy and rose to one of the senior ranks of the officer corps in the Navy.
Yeah.
But not only did he do that, but he finished college and went on and not only finished his bachelor's degree, but a master's degree and another master's degree and then a PhD degree. But what is so special to me is that he did something else. He learned to fly. You know, when my father was learning to fly in Tuskegee in 1942, the white officer said, "We're wasting our money. We're wasting our time." Because Negroes don't have the intelligence to be able to fly airplanes. And yet, as Dr. Nobles flew me around over the sky, in the sky over this area, and even flew out to where his mother and his family lived, and they came out of the house to wave at, I said, "I'm sure they believe now that a Negro can fly."
All right.
Well, as we close, I just want to say that it's been a beautiful experience to be here today. And I just want to let you know, as I tell students all over the country, and I speak in many elementary schools, middle schools, and high schools, colleges, I say, no dream is too small and no challenge is too great. Be whatever your dream takes you to become, but do it for the sake of the Lord and to uplift your family and your community. Because we know that from crippling circumstances, and many of us came from crippling circumstances. I was not born in a rich family, even though I had a great legacy, but my great-grandfather said, a better thing to have is a good name.
Uh-huh.
So he gave us a good name, and then he gave all his money to Tuskegee Institute. Amen. But finally, we know from studying the history of our great men that all of them came to tell us that we can be somebody. And to justify the conviction of the poet who said, "Fleecy lock and black complexion cannot forfeit nature's claim. Skin may differ, but affection dwells in black and white the same."
All right.
And he also said, "Were I so tall as to reach the pole, or to grasp at the ocean at a span, I must be measured by my soul. The mind is the standard of the man."
All right.
And finally, in your life's blueprint, there must be a commitment to the eternal principles of beauty, love, and justice. And as Booker T. Washington said, "Don't let anybody pull you down so low as to make you hate them." Don't let anybody cause you to lose your self-respect to the point that you stop fighting for justice.
All right.
And so, with a powerful commitment, as Dr. King said, I believe we can transform dark yesterdays of injustice into bright tomorrows of justice and humanity. So let us keep going toward the goal of selfhood, to the realization of the dream of brotherhood.
All right.
And toward the realization of the dream of understanding goodwill, and let nobody stop us. And I close by quoting once more, and I'm quoting now from one of my fraternity brothers, the great bard, the great poet Langston Hughes. One day he wrote a poem entitled "Mother to Son." And the mother didn't always have her grammar right, but she uttered words of great symbolic profundity.
Yes.
She said, "Well, son, I'll tell you, life for me ain't been no crystal stair. It's had tacks in it, boards torn up, and places with no carpet on the floor bare. But all the time I've been climbing on and reaching landings and turning corners and sometimes going in the dark where there ain't been no light. So boy, don't you stop now. And we say, girls, don't you stop now. Don't you sit down on the steps because you find it's kind of hard. For I still going, boys and girls, I still climbing, and life for me ain't been no crystal stair. Thank you.
Well, we hope that you enjoyed the rendition. Actually, for those of you who are listening via the internet, and I want to welcome Dr. Calvin Nobles, who invited me to make that speech a couple of years ago in his hometown. And I want to say thank you for joining us tonight, Dr. Nobles. And I just want to do a quick radio check. Are you able to hear me?
Brother Calvin, how are you doing? I can hear you.
Okay, good. Dr. Nobles, we always appreciate your presence, and it's just the two of us tonight, and not because I gave the speech. I'm not actually asking for accolades because of my reenactment. Dr. King is the originator of that speech, but a couple of years, 2.5 years out from that speech, again, not because I gave it, but because of Dr. King's being able to see what our young people and older people need in the way of inspiration. How do you feel about those words that he gave that I just happened to be able to reenact at that program? But how do you feel about them in terms of their appropriateness for the things that are going on in the world, especially among our young people today?
Oh, Brother Kevin, thank you. I listened to that intensively because I thought I had dialed the wrong number. And then I realized it was the words from your speech when you went to my hometown. But the words were very meaningful, especially you use a lot of annotations from very famous speeches and very famous people. But if you look at today's contemporary times, we're dealing with some of the very same issues. We're dealing with socioeconomic issues. We're dealing with inequality issues. We're dealing with a lot of other issues. We are even dealing with issues in our own communities, trying to get our own communities on track and make them stronger and make them more loving so that the black family can be stronger. So we have a lot of things going on right now. And I think hearing those words it's very befitting to the times we're living in right now, because it shows us that we made progress, but not a lot of progress. And we still got a long way to go. And I just really enjoy hearing you echo those words, because, you know, it means so much to some of us out here who are trying to be beacons of light for others. I just finished listening in to about a 2.5-hour conversation between a bunch of black, I don't want to say colleagues, but friends and associates that I know who are in the tech space, who was giving motivation and giving encouragement to others to join the tech space, which is probably one of the most, I don't want to say segregated, but a field where we still fall slightly below average levels in terms of race, and we just need to let people know that we are in this. We do have a presence in the tech field, and we are very good at it. And we also need to encourage young people to look to enter the tech fields, regardless of what people are telling them. And so, some of those words that you were saying, and some of the words that were said by Martin Luther King, and even your great grandfather, is very useful to us today. We are in a very similar fight, in some cases, the same fight, because people are afraid to give us equality, what we deserve. In some cases, we're just going to have to go out and demand it and take it, because we are a very capable people, intellectual people, and we've seen this on so many levels, but we're going to have to harness our own will and find and put us where we belong in society, and we can't rely on other people to do it. We've been doing that so long, so it's not that we become a militant. We just becoming fed up with not receiving what's ours.
Well, thank you so much. I certainly was experiencing one of the high points of my life that day when I was blessed through your graciousness to be able to deliver that reenactment of Dr. King's speech. And especially was it meaningful to me because I personally knew and was friends of a friend of Dr. King. And, you know, today, many years later, 50-some years later, as we look back, you know, on his great life, his short but great life, and I look around, and I'm not very, very active as I would like to be and probably will be more after this pandemic basically tamps down in the church world. In fact, I have two pastors that I've obligated myself to visit that I know personally that are pastors of two of the largest churches in the Augusta area, the pastor of Tabernacle Baptist Church, who is a fraternity brother of ours, and also the pastor of the Beulah Grove Baptist Church, which is the other of the two biggest churches in this area, and I've committed myself to visit them soon to get their support for a African American history program that I'm helping to put on at Augusta University this coming February. So I want to start building that connection, even though I know them, but I want to start building that connection to get their support. So I must say that, yes, there are many, many people, I believe, like yourself, I believe that are following in Dr. King's footsteps in terms of providing leadership. We have many, many role models that are walking in that same path of leadership. Some of our best leaders are not necessarily the most public leaders, but they are working in great, great efforts and successful efforts as you are and others in their respective fields. My concern is that there's a force that is working to counteract that positive energy. And what I mean is the social media now. The social media has branched out now to include social media videos. And many of these videos are just totally, totally inappropriate. And yet young people have access by just going up on their cell phones if they download, which the Apple apps people don't ask for your age when you download these apps. And if they download the YouTube app, which is free, then they have access to many, many videos, and a good percentage of these are not appropriate, not even for adults, much less for children, to be watching. And unfortunately, many of the people that are making these videos that are African American, the pictures they have on there, the language they use, the kind of low class culture they represent, what I call the culture of the urban street life, you know, there's a lot of things in the urban black communities that are very positive. I have to say that. You know, I lived in Oakland, California. I saw some nice homes in the black community. I saw some well-kept yards. I saw some great people, met some great people, visited with them. Also in San Francisco. But then there's that other side that is very, very devastated. The lives of the people are very devastated. And it seems like this is the kind of imagery, not to give a speech, because I'm definitely wanting to hear your opinion, but it seems like this kind of imagery, the dark side, the devastated side, that's being projected on a lot of these YouTube videos that a lot of our young people are taking great pleasure in looking at, and the language, my goodness, it's some of the filthiest language that you can imagine, spoken not just by some of the males, but females as well. And so while we have, on the one hand, these Martin Luther King, John Lewis, and other role models, past and present, that are lifting up our people morally and spiritually and intellectually, academically and culturally and athletically, but we also have these others that are trying to pull our people down. I want to close by saying this one thing. You know, I don't get in people's business. I try, even as a pastor, I've tried to stay out of people's married lives. I've had couples come to me for counseling, and I'm not a trained marriage therapist or marriage counselor, but being a pastor, people come to me with marriage problems, and I try to help them to communicate with each other, because I know that I don't have the knowledge level academically or even spiritually to be able to solve their problems for them. But I feel if they can communicate honestly with each other and get to the root of what's really a problem in their marriage, they might be able to come to a resolution. And so I'll say this in closing, because I know there are others listening besides just you and me, so I want to say this. You know, one of the great concerns that I have as I look at the entertainment world, and I don't pay a whole lot of attention to what's going on, the drama going on in marriages among our African-American entertainers, but it hurts me when I see these people that I like because they're good in their work, when I see them fail in their marriages, when I see them start off with such a good high expectation and even bring children into the world, and then for some reason or another they break up. And I'm looking at this one situation, I'm not going into it really deep because I don't know all the ins and outs of Kanye West and his wife, Kim Kardashian. Now, when you look at Kanye West and his career, he's what's called an entertainment mogul. He's at the top of that field, being not just a rapper, but a producer, a writer, a business icon in that world, whose wealth approaches $1 billion because of the rights that he has managed to secure for his work. And he's still producing. He shifted gears in the last couple of years to a more spiritual type of production. And he's got a following. And then a number of years ago, he was able to win the love of one of the most physically beautiful women in the world, according to European standards, Miss Kim Kardashian, who comes from a very notable family. Her father was one of the people that defended O.J. back in 1994, Bob Gardesian. He's gone now. And so she and her siblings have become notorious because they like to put their family business on the airwaves on TV. But she's done well as a businesswoman. I have some issues with the way she presents herself in public, but I'm not going there. But what has concerned me was the fact that she really loves this brother. It's obvious that she does. And I believe he really loves her, but there's something wrong with their marriage. And one of the things that's wrong is she said he's trying to control her. And the problem with that, and I'm not a psychologist, I just finished my first ever in my 76 and a half years on this earth, my first ever formal academic course in psychology. I've taken partial courses in psychology over the years, but this is the first full course I just finished 2 months ago. So I'm certainly not qualified to speak on a psychological level. But the thing about it is that she has said this brother has some serious problems, some mental / emotional problems that she's trying to be able to deal with him in spite of his problems, but he keeps throwing roadblocks the way, doing things that is making it hard for her to be able to communicate with him. The only reason why I'm saying this is that these two people just recently took their kids, went to the Dominican Republic, were able to get lodging at a very private estate to try to work out their situation. And so just yesterday or today, they posted on public social media a clip, video clip of them having fun together, really having family fun together. And it made me feel so good. It made me feel so good. So why did I even bring this up? Because they're working at it. So many young people don't work at it. And I see that our co-host has returned. I'm sure, knowing his punctuality, that he was on time, and I wasn't on time, and I won't make an excuse for it. I was actually doing some work on behalf of a couple of other people, but that's no excuse. I really need to take that number and try to call one of the two of you when I'm going to be late to see if I can get you to come on at 8 o'clock. I can give you the login information, the sign-in number and everything, so you could take to leave when I'm going to be a little late. So we'll work on that. But I apologize for being late, but we're here. So, Mr. Pialke, I had just, before you came on, played something you probably heard before. It's actually a copy, archive of a speech that I gave in Dr. Noble's hometown for Martin Luther King Day a couple of years ago, almost 2 years ago. And then we were talking, and I was just going, waiting for you really to come back. I felt you would come back on about something, and I'll close up now. And I have a topic that I want to bring up for the benefit of our audience. We have about another half an hour left on the time for which we're supposed to be broadcasting. But I was just saying that I wish that there were more visible, what I would say, representations, and people don't have to put their family business on social media, but I wish that these young people like Will Smith and his beautiful wife, Jada Pinkett Smith, and others that are going through these rough times, that they could do what Kanye and Kim are doing, is try to make it work. It's not always going to be a piece of cake. It's sometimes going to be very hard, especially when you got conflicting interests. But what I see them trying to do is what I would like to encourage all of our young people to do as they go through these ups and downs in their marriages is take time away from all the stress and try to get to know each other again, try to fall in love with each other again, and try to learn how to understand each other, communicate with each other. And I think if our families, young and middle-aged and old people as well, you know, can just break it down, be real, be clear and be honest with oneself and one's partner, I think that will give our community life a better strength and a better posture, because without having strong families, we cannot expect to have strong communities. And if we don't, in our ethnicity, have strong communities, we really have no hope for the future. So that's my little 2 cents work. So, okay, how are you doing this evening, sir? Let me go ahead and turn your mic on first, and then you can respond. Okay, you coming on now? Come on out. We're doing fine, but I'm sorry I was late tonight. I won't try to make excuse for that. Something did actually come up where I was trying to do something to help some folks, and I'm going to have to work it out where you have the information where you can start the show. If I'm going to be late like that in the future, we'll work that out. I'll communicate with you, and we'll work that out. But anyway, how's everything?
Well, at least you didn't blame it on slavery. But other than that...
No, I blame... I'm glad you said that, and I'm going to make this really quick. I'm going to make this really, really quick because
a lot of people do.
No, well, let me say this. This is real. I'm teaching this college course that starts in 11. No, it starts. This is the eighth. Starts in 9 days, and we start in this college course at the end of slavery. And a lot of things that happened right after slavery, for 10, 15 years after slavery, the white people really hated that the slaves were free. White people did not like the slaves being free. They didn't know what to do with free slaves. Some of them said, take them, make them go to Africa, go to the Caribbean, get them out of here. But they did not understand the slaves had problems that needed a lot of help to get fixed. So a lot of people, whenever the black people did something they didn't like, they blamed it not on slavery, but the fact that they weren't slaves anymore. So I'm not going to blame my problems on the fact that I was not a slave. I'm glad I was not a slave. Now, a lot of things that happened during slavery, I am suffering from. And I'm not going into that, but some white people owe me some money from back in 1850-something because I got some white ancestors that left me out of their will. And I think if I hadn't been a slave, they would have put me in the will. But because my ancestor that they spawned onto this earth was a slave, they decided they were legitimately able to leave me out of the will. And I think I need to go to court about that before I leave this world. So that's all I have to say
on
that.
I don't, you know, not to even talk about it, but to talk about that, you know, you have people that they leave siblings out of the will and nothing they can do about it. So I just wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah, you're right, but at least it can be contested. That's one thing I found out because I was, I am the executor of my mother's estate when she passed. And so I had to do some very serious research because I took an oath before the court to administer her estate. So I had to do some very serious research, and I found out that people can contest the will, and they will go before the court, and the judge will look at all the factors to see if that person has a legitimate claim, even if they were left out of the will for some reason or another. So I feel I have a legitimate claim. Now, that's going
to
be
a
good
judge. Well, that's what you're supposed to do. Take it to court and see what happens.
See what happens. But anyway, this is what I want to talk about. Unless you have something that you want to bring up, I have a question I want to put before the audience. This is a simple question. Minister Louis Farrakhan, the head of the Black Muslims of the Nation of Islam in America, has a speech scheduled for tomorrow by his national representative. This is a lady. Her name is Sister Ava Muhammad. I don't know her personally, but this is his person he calls his national representative. And she's going to be giving this speech. And from what I understand from the advertisement that I get, you know, advertisements when they have these speeches, the program is going to be promoting the idea of Black people resisting getting the COVID-19 vaccine when it comes out. Now, my question, I'm gonna ask Dr. Nobles first and let you, you know, pick up so you can cap on top of what he might say if you want to. And then I'll come in with what I think after you. But what do y'all think about this leader, our brother, our Black leader, advocating for our people not to get this vaccine that could possibly kill some people and possibly save some lives? What do you think, Dr. Nova?
Well, I would tell you this. Understanding the Belmont report and understanding how research is conducted and understanding how the Federal Drug Administration has a very stringent process, and they will only authorize only a few of the people that's even trying to develop the vaccine now, even if they are successful at doing it, only a few will be actually given authorizations to manufacture it because they have to meet these very stringent standards. And also, part of my decision-making process also comes from me being in the military, knowing that we've been vaccinated for everything that we can name and some things that we can't name. I feel like in this case, I've also heard people say that, you know, the vaccine for the coronavirus is changing people's DNA construct. I don't know how true that is. I haven't put any effort in trying to study that. But I heard several people make that comment. And I don't know. I'm eventually will get around to researching it and reading it for myself. But what concerns me is that we still have a virus that is extremely dangerous for our population, and without having some type of control, because right now, other than following the CDC guideline, there is no other control for this. And maybe the vaccine will be our only control. And some people are going to take the vaccine, they're going to have allergic reactions to it. Some people are going to take it, they're going to die from it. Some people are going to take it, and they're going to be able to develop a defense against this. It's not going to affect everybody the same way. And I think we have, for me, I hope we have enough research before the vaccine is authorized that we're able to make a really profound understanding and decision on what we have in our possession. I think telling people not to get vaccinated is a strong defense when so little really is known about it right now. So that's like telling somebody with AIDS not to take medication. It's like telling people, you know, not to wear, you know, protection when you're doing other things. So I have a problem with that, especially when there's not enough research on this thing and we're trying to give people instruction. We have to be very careful because just like, you know, people wrote Trump for saying the things he said about the coronavirus, we need to ride one of our leaders for saying something or doing something erroneous. Because right now, this virus is extremely pervasive in our neighborhoods. Well, we have other factors going on that, you know, we have lost a lot of people that are brown and black because they're having pre-existing conditions. So I think for an organization who's not allied with some type of experts to come in and say, this is what we believe, I think it's extremely dangerous. And it's no different than what Trump did when he's talking about, you know, the bleach thing or some of the other comments he made about the virus. So why would we trade one for the other? We must treat all of them the same in this case. If you're putting out something that's erroneous or that you can't substantially defend, then you need to stop. That's what's wrong with this country now. We got too many shot callers and not enough really people understanding it. And we need to also understand that science is a practice. And until you get it, you know, to a point to where you got small controls or small outbreaks, it's always going to be a practice. But I think it's extremely dangerous when you're telling black people not to get vaccinated.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Nova. So, Ms. Piaggi, what's your take on that?
Well, the Nation of Islam don't speak for me. They speak for the people that follow them. And I agree with Mr. Nobles. Why come there's not an outcry with what she said like it is with Donald Trump? Yeah, it's hypocrisy. And it can be pointed along a lot of things, not just this one suggestion that this person is making. So people shall do what they want to. And if they want to be vaccinated, they will be vaccinated. If they don't, they won't. And I've heard similar things like coming from these so-called sign leaders telling black youth don't go to white colleges, telling black youth don't go to work for white corporations, and telling black youth other things that they should be well-versed in making decisions on their own. How are you going to tell somebody not to go to work for a NASA? Oh, boy. So, Mr. Noble is right. That's not their scope to be doing, but they can do it anyway. I guess to their members, however great that population is, I guess they can make those suggestions to them. But using terms like our people, my people, and so on, that's a little erroneous. I think it'd be more specific to the memberships of the NOI, Nation of Islam. That's my opinion.
Well, thank you. We don't have but a few minutes, so I just want to throw in my a little bit. Actually, I don't think it's very helpful to the mind of the community. We're already confused about so many things, looking for a way out, looking for a clear direction. And I think it's just throwing more confusion in the minds of people that don't need any more confusion. And I, for one, and I'm not a big person on taking all these shots. In fact, you know, when I got to be a senior in the military where I didn't have anybody to march me up to get the flu shot, I stopped getting the flu shot because I didn't want to get sick. That's a chance that I was able to take. And, you know, that was just one thing. But when I was a junior enlisted person, I had to stand in line and walk with everybody else to get those shots. And I remember going through basic training, and then when I went back into service years later, when I went through the reinduction into the military and had to get shots updated, you go through the line and they'd have these guns that would shoot the stuff in you, and one the corpsman would be on one side and another would be on the other side, and you know what you would be getting. And until you finally got your shot record where you could look at it, and then you still didn't know what it was all about. But the fact is that I don't like the idea of people putting unknown substances in my body. But in the military, as I say, until you get to be up to a certain level, you really don't have any choice. And even at that level, if a senior officer had told me I need to get back in line, chief, you got to get back in line, you got to get a shot, I would have had no choice. But the fact of the matter is that I will take the vaccine if it's been scientifically proven that it's not going to kill me or make me seriously ill, because I am vulnerable. Just because of the fact that I'd rather have some short-term illness than have what kills people, you know, with, you know, the problems that people have with the breathing and all that, because I already have had breathing issues with having had pneumonia several times. So, you know, I know my lungs are already vulnerable, so I'd rather, you know, have some short-term illness that's not going to kill me from not being able to breathe. But I will say this. I'm glad that they had polio vaccination and smallpox vaccination when I was a child, because I have never seen anybody suffer from smallpox. I've read about it, done a lot of studies about it, but I'm glad that it was eradicated pretty much 100% in the United States when I was a child and I had to get the smallpox vaccination. Now, you know, I see a lot of the young people come in into my space up at the university, and, you know, during the summertime, the springtime, a lot of them are wearing these sleeveless type of shirts. And they don't have that smallpox scar that we all had in my generation, because they don't have to get that anymore because smallpox is not an issue. But we all had that smallpox scar. Everybody had it because all the people in my generation got vaccinated. I'm glad that I got vaccinated because I've read about how bad smallpox was, and I'm glad that it was gone pretty much. And the same thing with polio. Now, I will say this in closing, my little commentary. I was probably one of the first children in the world. Now, that might be a little bit extreme, but I think I'm pretty correct. I was probably one of the first children in the world that was treated with penicillin. See, it wasn't until right before World War II that penicillin became available to the military. The civilians didn't get it until later. The first penicillin, large disposition, went to the military right at the beginning of World War II. And I was born right at the beginning of World War II, actually in the middle of World War II. And because I had a serious injury where it was a life and death situation for me to get an antibiotic, they tried penicillin on me and it worked. But to this day, I'm allergic to penicillin. But thank God that my mother signed off on me getting that penicillin. And of course, she had probably, I didn't see the paperwork, but knowing, you know, some of the things, protocols that they have now, she probably had to sign off saying that she accepted the responsibility for whatever happened if it didn't work. In other words, if it killed me, you know, she could not make a complaint against the Army. You know, well, fortunately, it did not kill me, but to this day, I can't take penicillin anymore because they had put so much of it in me to save my life. But I'm glad that they had this antibiotic. I'm hoping that they come up with a vaccine that will immunize people from getting this coronavirus that's killed over 160,000 people right in this country since February. And you don't know when you leave the house, unless you're wearing a protective suit, if you're going to come back home with it. I go up on the campus now every day, and my wife is worried that I'm going to bring it back home because it's in the air. It's not just a matter of somebody breathing a coughing on you, but they say it could be in the air. You know, that's why they say 6 feet is not necessarily going to be far enough away from somebody. Depends on a lot of things, the circulation of the air, ventilation, and other factors. Even maybe the temperature in the room could maybe make it be more than 6 feet that you have to be. So when I go to work, I just hope and pray. I'm wearing my mask, you know, I'm trying to maintain the 6 feet and doing and trying to not be touching stuff that somebody just touched. But still, it's out there. It can be acquired. So I hope that they come up with some kind of vaccine, and I will take it. And yes, I agree. I don't know what's behind Ms. Farrakhan's people taking that position. I know that, yes, there are going to be some people that are going to die that are used as the test population. They expect that. And the people that sign up for it, maybe they saying it's worth, if they have to give their life to save a few million people, fine. I don't know. But personally, myself, if I was the leader of any group, I would not be telling that group, if that vaccine, as Dr. Novus alluded to, had been scientifically tested, had been rigorously validated to be as safe as they can make it, you know, using all the standards they use. I don't believe leaders should be out there telling people not to use this. I don't know what's behind that, but I thought it'd be a good topic for discussion. So we'll go around one more time, and our time on the air will be over. We got extra time tonight because we started late, but we're at pretty much the end of that time. So we'll go around one more time. Dr. Nobles, did you want to make any more commentary? And I do want to give my assistant, who just came on a few minutes ago, a chance to respond. So Dr. Nobles, before you come back, let me invite Stephanie to give a comment. Stephanie, welcome to the show. We started a little bit late tonight, but I'm so glad you came on. And I don't know if you heard what we were talking about, but I'll just reiterate the topic without commenting. I was just saying to the audience that the National Representative, Minister Louis Farrakhan, the leader of the Black Muslims of the Nation of Islam, is going to be doing a broadcast tomorrow. And according to the advertisement that I read, she's going to be advocating for black people not to be taking the vaccination for this COVID-19 whenever it comes out. What do you think?
Wow. That's kind of scary. I don't want to be a guinea pig, but I know somebody's got to experiment with the vaccination. I understand that there are three different types that they're experimenting with right now, and they have a lot of volunteers, thousands of them, who are willing, but we never know what those after effects are going to be. 2, 3, 5, 10 years down the road, I just try to stay safe, wear my mask everywhere I go, and keep clean. And thank God, so far I haven't caught it. I just go as less places as I have to. I agree with the Farrakhan group on that. I don't think we should be in a rush to take this vaccination. There's enough people willing to volunteer. See what happens with them. That's my take on it. I think we ought to be just real thankful that none of us have gotten it, because there's so many people dying every day from this stuff. We just got to continue being safe and safe as we can and keeping our distance. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you. As you can see, as our panelists have shown us, there are different sides, there are different opinions, different views. My sister-in-law, whose opinion I respect to the utmost, just said she, was on board with Mr. Farrakhan and his representative, and our people not taking it. On me, I will take it just because of the fact that I'm very vulnerable, and if it's already been tested rigorously to the extent the people that have been in my vulnerability status have survived it, then I would rather take it and become immunized as much as possible than get it, because as I just mentioned, I'm in a very exposed type of environment up at the university. We have the students coming back next Monday, this coming Monday rather. We have 10,000 students that's going to have been all over the world, because our students, we have students from 48 different nations. Some of them are first world nations, some of them are third world nations, some of them may be fourth world nations. And then we have all of these students from all over the United States of America. You name, an area in the United States of America, we probably have at least one or two students from there. No telling what they have been exposed to in those few months that they have not been on campus since April. And they're going to all be coming back, and they're going to be touching everything. and they're going to be breathing in the spaces that I have to be in, and so forth and so on, even though I may not be getting close to them to have a conversation. But if I go into the food court to get a little snack, or, you know, I eat my dinner usually, the working schedule I have going into Monday, around 4 o'clock in the evening, 5 o'clock in the evening, and there's going to be probably some people still in there buying stuff, and I may not be 6 feet away from them as I'm walking up to the counter to get my stuff. So it's a vulnerable situation. So if they're is a vaccine that will give me more of a protection than I have, I'd probably take it if it's been tested rigorously, but that would be another year and a half, probably 2 years maybe, before I have the opportunity to take it. I'm not going to jump out there and be one of those early birds that's volunteering that you mentioned, Stephanie, because those people are putting themselves at great risk. I'm not jumping into that fire. But once it's been tested, I believe I'll go ahead and take it. So we're going to have a chance for Dr. Novus and Ms. Bianchi, and finally you, Stephanie, after they talk, if you want to say a final comment, and then we'll wrap up. So, Dr. Novus, would you like to comment on what Stephanie said or Ms. Bianchi said?
I actually agree with both. The one point that I would like to make is that it is so important that we educate ourselves on the truth. Everybody wants to be an authoritative source now, but nobody wants to put in the work to find out what the truth is, and it makes it very difficult for people to find out what the truth is. If you, chances are you're not going to find it on social media. So find some trusted sources that you have. Call your friends. Call your local government. Find the truth. Understand what the truth is. And don't be swayed by people who are not authoritative sources for information. We have to get back to the basis of having factual information. And as long as we got everybody who are going through Facebook and social media universities getting a PhD, it's going to be difficult for people to find the truth. And I think it's important for us to start holding people accountable for not reporting the truth and stating the truth, especially when they're trying to circulate information, you know, regarding health and other concerns. That's just one of my biggest concerns, is that we have other countries who are also putting out misinformation and disinformation because they're trying to sell an agenda. And so it doesn't help when we as Americans add to that. So that's why this whole coronavirus situation in this country has been taken to a whole nother level. It's because we got so many people putting out information that's not accurate, and people don't really understand what to do or who to believe anymore. And we need to make it very clear that when it comes to the coronavirus, there are only a few people that really understand this thing. Even though this virus is different, the experts understand that there are behaviors that viruses have, and there's certain things you can do, and that's who we need to be listening to until we get to a point to where this information is readily available to everybody and everybody disseminate it. And that's why it's important also for this administration to make sure that this accurate information is available and it comes from the sources and no one else. So that's my only concern when it comes to understanding what this virus is really about, is that make sure you have credible sources.
Well, that's great, great advice, and we certainly appreciate you putting it out into the public space, because as I've said many times, even though we may only have 4 or 5 people on the panel at any given time, there are many more people that actually tune in via the internet. I've had a number of people tell me they just don't like to get on there and voice their opinion or participate on the panel, but they listen. So everyone who is listening, please take heed of what Dr. Novus just advised. Thank you so much, Dr. Novus. So, Ms. Bianchi, we're wrapping up now. Do you have a comment you would like to leave us with?
Yeah, I see where Ghana which has a population, I guess, about close to 30 million. They've only had 40,500 confirmed, 37,700 recovered, only 206 deaths.
So what's the secret? What do you think? Or have you heard?
No, I haven't. And the lady, the Nigerian doctor, that everybody jumped on and ridiculed, but she made good sense in what she said. So anyway, that's for people to be concerned of. Like I said before, I hear people saying what we, and like making reference to blacks as if there aren't rest of the population in this country, that's a separate nation. But always have had that. Apparently keep on talking about it because it's not working. But everybody be safe and have a nice week.
Okay, thank you so much. And we'll get together somehow and we can work out something for you to back me up in case I can't be here on time, which is rare, but it can happen. So I want to make sure the show will go on. So I'll communicate with you somehow and give you the PIN number and the sign-in number so you can start the show. If I'm not here, I'll give you that information. If you'd be so kind as to let me do that, and we'll talk about it in the future, okay? Okay, so, Stephanie, we're going to let you have the last word tonight. Would you like to add any final comments?
No, I don't have anything to add except for I just continue to keep everyone up in prayer as well as myself. And just stay safe, everyone. God bless you
all. Okay, God bless you and all of us. We all need prayer, so thank you very much for including us in your prayers. So with that said, Dr. Nose, do you have a final comment? Okay, well, we're going to close now. So we thank everyone that's been on our panel tonight. We thank all of you who have listened from wherever you may be in the world, and we hope that you will join us again on next Saturday. And as we have said over the last 3.5 years, we look at the news throughout the week, and based on what is in the news, we decide what we'll talk about when we gather together in our family room. And so we can't tell you exactly what we're going to talk about next Saturday, but if you keep your ear to the ground, keep watching and listening, you probably have some idea of what is going on that can be discussed. And we invite you, even if we don't pick it as a topic that we start off with, we invite you to call in and present what you think about whatever's going on. So with that said, God bless you all. Thank you for joining us, and may you have a good rest of the weekend. And pray for all those families that have lost loved ones, not just from the coronavirus in any way, but certainly we definitely are going to keep those coronavirus victims and their families in our thoughts and our prayers. So good night, and God bless you.